Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, our weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Gay liberation began as a sexual freedom movement in the 60s, but its more recent efforts have been about gay marriage or marriage equality. Where does that leave the many gay men who prefer sex to marriage or have both in open relationships? Do gay men have a harder time finding true love than lesbians? Whatever that means. Do they have a harder time forming and staying in them compared to lesbians who are supposed to bring a U-Haul on the second date? And heterosexual people who are constantly pressured by the rest of the straight society to get married? We're going to talk to two women, one who matchmakes for gay men and one who matchmakes for lesbian women. Matchmaker Sonia Singh and Dr. Frankie, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you for having us.
It's good
Thank
to see you,
Marilyn.
You bet. And it's going to be interesting to find out the differences here for matchmaking for gay men or for lesbians. And we'll compare that as well to what that's like for matchmakers who work with men and women. Why do people need this? Why is this such a difficult thing for some people to find other people? What is it about our culture now? Was it always like this? I don't think so. It seems to be a growing thing that people are tapping into using.
Well, matchmaking is a place where...
Sonia, yes.
Yeah. Matchmaking is a place where our clients come to outsource their love life to us. They don't want to actually go online dating or go to the bars. They want to meet someone that they have a connection with and they have a long-term connection with. And that's the reason why matchmaking is popular for those people and it's available.
It's for the busy professional, largely?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
People who don't have time, who are working a lot, building their careers, and they want to find a partner, but they don't want to go to bars, and they don't want to get into sex websites. And
it streamlines the process. So they don't have to spend all this time, you know, wasting time on online dating sites and going out on dates where they show up and the person doesn't look anything like the photo that they posted. Or, you know, their narrative doesn't sound anything like they are, you know, in real person. It's not representing them well.
What you're saying there is that in some ways you're sort of a clearinghouse for the actual truth of the person.
Yes.
That you're actually representing from one person to another the truth about someone mm-hmm. as much as you can detect it in
right.
your own process with
right.
them.
Yes, we weed through.
You weed through.
Right.
What's it like when you're interviewing a prospective client and you're trying to get them to tell you the truth and maybe people are hedging about I don't know, anything from a past criminal record to mental illness. I don't know.
There's a lot of observation. So it's not, I spend about 90 minutes with my clients and I observe, aside from what they're telling me, I observe their behavior.
Right. So
and you're a trained psychologist.
I'm a psychologist.
And so that helps, that training helps you, but also you're an intuitive, I suppose you're attracted to this as a profession because you have some knack for it. You have some sense of being able to read people, both of you,
yes,
Sonia,
of course.
As
yeah.
well.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time with our clients in person and see their body language and hear their tone of voice and really understand their needs and wants more on a personal level. We get to understand and like really learn about our clients.
And so,
it's very different than just a profile online.
How long do you spend with somebody initially?
About an hour to an hour and a half. It's pretty thorough.
Yeah, I spend about 2 hours.
Although, ladies, it takes a long time to really get to know somebody.
That's
I know,
initially,
I
like
see.
When we're interviewing our clients.
Yeah.
But we get to spend a lot of quality time with them.
We build relationships with them over
yeah.
time. Like I run events. They show up at my events. They sometimes do my speed dating. They'll just show up at social events that I have. And I get to know them and make an effort to connect
speed
with them.
Dating. And let's talk about that for a second. So that's where people sit down and quickly interview each other. And what it does is it actually gives us old timers that used to just meet by feeling attracted to someone at a party. In other words, seeing someone before you talk to them and then talking to them and feeling an attraction before you find out if you have common interests, sort of in that old those stages. The speed dating allows people to do that by just seeing and hearing each other before any kind of matchmaking itself goes on.
It gives them the opportunity to actually talk to people in a social arena where they normally may, you know, they may be shy. They may not be comfortable just approaching somebody that they think is attractive. So it gives them the opportunity to sit down and have 3 to 4 or even sometimes 5 minutes together.
Hmm. And tell me about that, Dr. Frankie, who you work with lesbian women. What kind of success rate or what are the effects of that? How does that play out?
You know, you can either match on, you know, interest in having another date with them, a second date, because the first date is considered the speed dating, right? You could match on a professional level or on a friendship level. So as long as you match on one category, I will send you each other's information to connect with one another. And success rate, I don't really follow up with them necessarily, so I don't know what their follow through is.
So you're more of a connector than you are somebody who ensures some sort of long-term success. Right. And so what's it like if they do connect on the career, or if they say, well, I really want to get together with that person. If the other person doesn't, then that doesn't happen.
It has
to be mutual.
Yes. Has to be mutual. And it's nice for people who sort of are kind of ambivalent about doing it, because they can step in saying, okay, I want to meet somebody for friendship. So it's less of a commitment. It's less intimidating because I don't eliminate it. You know, I don't eliminate people who are only, you know, who aren't interested in dating necessarily. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to participate, even if you're interested in just making a business connection.
Now, Sonia Singh, you work with gay men. It's a candy store, my gay men friends have said for a long time here in San Francisco in particular. It's a candy store for gay men. They can have whatever kind of sexual encounter they want at any time of the day. And what is it about gay men that, at least in the stereotype we lesbians and perhaps others in the culture have of them, makes it so difficult for them to form partnerships or to deal with words like commitment? Now, not everybody, but it is a sort of part of the stereotype. It's a stereotype of gay men.
It is a stereotype, and I actually don't use the word commitment with my gay clients. I use the word partnership. You're here to create a partnership. And frankly, a client who comes to me for matchmaking, he's looking for a long-term connection. He's looking for love because there's cheaper routes to find a boy toy or a one-night stand. You know, actually, there's free routes to that these days, and it's available to them. The Castro is a great place to go and find that. But if you're hiring a matchmaker to find a potential connection that's going to be there, and they want to have, they want to create a relationship, a partnership with that person. I do think it's a big stereotype, and there's a lot of men who are looking for that. But then there's that the other way that you can look at it, where there's a lot of men who are looking to find that relationship and that bond with someone.
And so, is it you're a woman, you're a beautiful woman, and is that an appealing thing for gay men to work with a beautiful woman more than, say, a beautiful man?
Well, I don't think it's really an appealing thing. It could be, but I think it's more so in an interest to them where there's no conflict of interest. When a gay man comes to me and he's like, okay, let me tell you about what I'm looking for, he feels comfortable talking to me versus when he would talk to a gay man.
It'd be easier to talk to women about these
things. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And especially a lesbian woman. You know, I'm not there to
judge.
You're a lesbian?
I
am.
Well, that's good. It's a gay show. No, everybody has to be. No. Yeah. But it's a challenge sometimes, isn't it, Sonia, to work with gay men? By the way, you're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Marilyn Pittman. My guests are Dr. Frankie and Sonia Singh. They are both matchmakers. Dr. Frankie for lesbians, and Sonia is a matchmaker for gay men. And you can find them at
littlegaybook.com.
Littlegaybook.com and findingbliss.com.
Findingbliss.org.
.org, I'm sorry. And so let's talk a little bit deeper about the gay men conundrums that go on with gay men. I mean, what are some of the obstacles you've dealt with in a client? Like, you're talking to a guy, you're getting to know him, and then you're like, well, you're thinking in the back of your head, this guy's got some stuff going on. I don't know if I'm going to be able to succeed with him. It might take a few months of doing what you both do, which is coaching. You help coach your clients to get ready for love, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Knowing
it does.
What I know.
And I personally don't work with every single person who approaches me to be a potential client. When I'm interviewing, I'm really seeing if they see the value in what I do and if they're going to be open to listening and receiving what I have to say to them and in my coaching sessions with them as well. And if they see the value in what I'm doing for them and if they're going to be open, if they're going to be trusting, because I'm out there and I'm thinking about them and thinking about who can be a potential match for them. So I'm kind of like a little recruiter for them. Mm-hmm. So I have to be excited about working with this gentleman, and he has to be just as open-minded and trusting that I would be able to find him a good match.
And so what kinds, have you had a situation where you realize they're not trusting enough and you say, I don't think we can work together? Is that what you do?
Absolutely. I just say that I don't think that we would be a good match together, and there's other matchmakers out there that you can reach out to. We want to make sure that you and I have a good connection before I'm out there thinking about who can be a good match for you, mm-hmm. for a life partner. You know, I have to be excited. I have to be saying all these wonderful things, and I want to believe in what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm judgmental when I say, no, I can't work with you. It's just that maybe I'm not the expert in that field. And it could be I'm looking for an open relationship, or I have lots of fetishes, or anything. It could be
Wait a minute, let's back up for a second.
Just personality.
What do you mean I have lots of fetishes? What does that have to do with it?
Well, I may not have clients who are looking for something like that.
Oh, from your talent pool.
Exactly. But it probably would be a good match for someone else and not myself.
Dr.
Frankie said, it could just be personality. Him and I might not have that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's important. The connection with your clients is really important because you want to like them. You want to feel good about them. You want to feel like you can represent them well. And, you know, mm-hmm. it's like selling a product, right? Mm-hmm. In a way, you want to like the product that you're selling. You want to believe in the product that you're selling.
Absolutely.
So what are some of the obstacles, Dr. Frankie, you've run into with lesbian women? I mean, part of the problem I've seen is that we end up forming bonds too quickly.
Yeah.
We merge too much. We end up trying to bring that U-Haul on the second date without looking where we're going sometimes.
Exactly.
What do you do with that kind of problem?
You know, I think we really know what we want and we don't necessarily know what we need. So I help people really think about, well, what is it that you need? We clearly know what you want. And sometimes it's really hard because people they're set in what they really want. They have a long, long list. And I sort of have to work with them in being realistic about what is on this list and how much of this list is really necessary and how much of this list is actually creating barriers for you and obstacles to finding the right person.
You see, that's funny because I would think that that's what my experience with gay men is that they put up a lot of barriers about looks mm-hmm. and size.
We have that in lesbian community as well.
Yes. And what are some of the other things on the list that lesbians might have? They have to have
money.
Money.
Age. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, I'm seeing it more frequently where...
So you don't value that. You don't think those are good reasons to filter someone in or out?
To a certain extent, it just depends on a case-by-case basis. It depends. If there's a huge socioeconomic difference, it could create a problem. It depends on the person.
Or a huge age difference.
Or a huge age difference. But if, you know, I'm working with a client that wants to start, you know, meet women who are 15 to 20 years younger... You know, it limits me. It limits the pool. There are a lot of women that won't be willing to date older women. So then we're narrowing the pool down even more. You want somebody who's a professional that makes over $100,000 a year, that lives in San Francisco, that's 15 to 20 years younger than you. Mm-hmm. Let's be realistic. I mean, I want to be successful.
Huh. Interesting. And so you found that sometimes when they're putting up those things that it's a barrier, that they're kind of making it so that they can't find anybody.
Exactly.
And that if they found someone that met most of the parameters, they still wouldn't be good enough for me. And is that really is what's underneath that low self-esteem? Or is there really such a thing as too much confidence?
Well, they set themselves up, right, to not be available for anybody. Mm-hmm. There's no, they create so many barriers that they're not available. So yes, I do think that they're afraid of intimacy.
Well, interesting. So that's emotional availability.
Absolutely. And that's where we work with them in coaching, if they're open to receiving that. And we really look at, well, what is it that you really want? What is it that you're really looking for? And I truly believe that the pickier you are, the more you know yourself, the more you respect yourself. But be picky about the right things.
Like,
you know, be picky about values. Okay, well, do we see at the light at the end of the tunnel? Is it the same color as I see it, you know, are the visions the same as what I'm looking for in life as well? Like, I think those things are more important
than the superficial.
Absolutely.
Although
well,
we know with the gay men community,
also have a distorted sense of ourselves. I think sometimes we have an inflated sense of our appearance and, you know, our own self-esteem because we're overcompensating for feeling really insecure. So we are thinking that we could be with somebody who's kind of out of our league, right? And they come to us saying, well, hey, you're a matchmaker. You can find me somebody that uh-huh. looks like this. You know, uh-huh. I know exactly what I want.
Like a trophy
and this
wife.
Is, yes. And I have the money
husband.
To pay you. And I have money. So
go
can't
get
you
me
find
a trophy.
Me? Yes.
Oh, I bet there's some of that, especially with gay men who I've known, you know, a lot of gay men over the course of my life, and they're like, oh, I really, I've known so many gay men, and I do think that you're right about it being an, it's a fear of intimacy at the same, and low self-esteem, whatever else is going on there, but there was a sort of, like, people who only like certain beautiful men, and then they don't like anybody who looks like them.
Well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, Marilyn. Like, to, you know, I'm walking down the street with Frankie, she might think someone is totally stunning, and I am like, oh, really? It's really not my type, you know? It's really what's in the eye of the beholder. So handsome or beautiful might be totally different in my eyes than it would be to my client eyes.
Well, but our society, right? In our society, there is an idea. We have an ideal, of what beauty looks like. It's somebody who's skinny. It's somebody who's tall. It's somebody who might be, you know, fair-skinned or, you know, Caucasian, blonde hair, blue eyes. I mean, there's, right? We have this idea in our society.
We do. In fact, I saw the movie Moneyball. And when I did, there's a line in Moneyball where the scout says about this player, well, his wife's not very attractive. Well, so what's the matter with that? Well, it just indicates he has low self-esteem if he has an unattractive wife. And I just thought that was sort of an interesting, you know, thing that was depicted about this world of baseball. And I thought, well, So, you know, if a guy doesn't have a hot wife, if you're a baseball player, and they're hot, then that says something bad about how you feel about, yourself. And I think that's, I thought it was interesting. I'm just putting it out there. I just thought it was interesting just to see where you guys will take that.
People are, you know, people are going to say all sorts of things and they're going to assume things. And I just think it's important for us to be confident and comfortable in our own skin. And just, you know, we're attracted to who we're attracted to. And there's always going to be something negative to be said about somebody else.
So you're not going to give me any gossip about someone specific. That's what I really want. I want you to tell me, well, I can't disclose the name, but there was this woman or there's this man that I worked with and they just weren't ready because because part of your job, a lot of your job is to figure out if they're ready for the service that you provide. Isn't it?
No, absolutely. And they have to, being ready is really knowing about yourself and knowing who you are and being comfortable with who you are and what you're looking for, right? That to me is ready. And that you're willing to to be open to the idea of matchmaking as well. Like, you have to kind of let go of your control and trust that you hired us as professionals and we're out there looking for you. So be open to that idea.
You write on your website, Sonia. I'm talking with Sonia Singh, who's Finding Bliss Matchmaking Service, specializes in gay men, and Dr. Frankie, who specializes in helping lesbians. She's at littlegaybook.com, and Sonia is at findingbliss.org. You say something on your website about these two guys you got together and how they had sex 4 to 6 times a day. And I'm sorry, but they've been together 2 years. That's got to burn out, girl. Really?
Well, everybody
4 to 6 times
different.
A week. Really? Are they?
Everybody's completely different. If you have a high sex drive and your partner has a high sex drive, then
why not? But that's beyond high. That's gay male obsessive. I'm sorry.
They are the sweetest couple
times.
But look, they're enjoying it.
They must have nothing better.
I mean, I'm sorry, I'm a comedian here. I got to play the comedian. They must have nothing better to do.
They're wonderful. They have friends. They go out, do things. But they just have a really good sex drive as well. And they're happy and they're proud.
Good for them.
Good for them.
I'm not buying it. I love you guys, but I'm not buying it. And let's talk about the ready thing. The Imago relationship model that I studied in working on my own relationship issues over time says that you only fall in love with people who are a composite image or imago of your family, both positive and negative characteristics. Do you ascribe to that, Dr. Frankie? And if so, how do you coach your clients to deal with those imago, like they push your buttons, but you're really attracted to them kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we're attracted to people that they're familiar. There are similarities. There are characteristics that somehow resemble somebody in our family. There's overlap there. Yeah, so I do believe that we're attracted to people that are familiar to us in, you know, one way or another because we've had experiences with similar characters. Which is actually what I wanted to touch on earlier, stepping away from our comfort zone, right? So as coaches and matchmakers, we encourage our clients to kind of step away, step out of our pattern. You know what I mean? We're encouraging you to date somebody who's different, who you may not initially feel attracted to, but trust us in this, that we don't want to repeat patterns here. So we're trying to break a pattern. So yes, I do think that we're attracted to people who, you know, we either have...
that contain some sort of composite energy from
exactly.
our family.
But that doesn't necessarily
positive
mean
and negative.
That's a good thing. It's not always a good thing. We all come from, you know.
Dysfunctional family.
Exactly.
This is what I'm trying to get to is it's positives and negatives, though. And I know with my partner, we are complete imago matches. I'm the outsized personality of all of her family. And I don't want to get into too much here. And she is a sort of more accommodating, you know, taking care of, you know, my outsized personality. And this is something, because we have done so much therapy and we are conscious beings, that we work hard on. And when we run into conflict, when we run into trouble, we definitely have that imago energy. And because we're so attracted and still so connected and in love with each other, that's what sustains it. There is lots of love there, but there's conflict in those imago family kinds of ways. But we're conscious and we have language for it. And we have tools of coping with it and identifying with it and actually serving to help each other work through some of those things.
Yes.
Take up more space, I say to her, and I try to take up less.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Maybe I've disclosed too much here, but it's for the purposes of the audience, which is who we serve. We're in public radio here, to understand what's interesting about trying to, you know, for those of you who are listening and haven't found someone and wish you could, you know, it's a matter of understanding how some of these dynamics, and developing tools. Don't you think that's also part of it, is developing some tools?
Absolutely. And that's the coaching piece that we do, is where we help people acquire the tools and also recognize your own triggers.
Right.
Recognize when you're going to get stuck in, you know, potentially get stuck in your partnership.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's really about changing your thoughts and changing your patterns and changing the way that things have been in the past for you. So if you've never found a partner in the past, that doesn't mean that you can't break your patterns and look at your future in a different light. Mm-hmm. And that's where we come in, and we show them that different light, and we help them figure out what it is that they're really looking for, and figure out the demons in their closet and let them come out and work on them.
So in some sense, what you're saying, Sonia, is that if you want to work with me and you haven't been lucky so far, you haven't been successful and you're frustrated, you're probably going to have to change.
Absolutely. I think the most important relationship you can have is the relationship with yourself. I think we both believe that, right? And if you have that with yourself, and we're going to work on you, it's inevitable that you're going to find a happy, successful relationship if that's the life that you want to create. But you really have to, it's a two-way street. If you have to work with me, you planted a seed, you have to nourish it, you have to love it, you have to feed it in order for it to grow. Otherwise, it's just a seed and it's gonna die. The plant is not gonna grow. So we as matchmakers are the seeds that these wonderful clients that we work with, they plant to change their life, to create a relationship in their life.
Can you think of an example, either one of you, of somebody who's been stuck in a certain way of thinking and you've had to coach them for several months even and get them to finally sort of shift the way they've been stuck in this modality of thinking they had to have somebody like this and being more open? Talk about that, please.
Do you want to give an example?
I mean, I think that many of my clients that I can think of have, you know, they initially come to me because they're stuck. They haven't been successful doing online dating. They haven't been successful meeting people at the bars or being, connected with people that their friends think, you know, set up on blind dates. And they come to me because they're stuck. So most of them, I would say, we work through. I don't have one particular example, but we work through their fears. Fear of intimacy.
Fear is big, right?
Yes.
Fear is huge.
Insecurities.
How do you work through fears? I mean, doesn't that take a lifetime of therapy or no?
No.
That's the difference between therapy and coaching. Coaching is more, it's quicker and more effective and more direct and more about behavior.
Exactly.
Changing thinking and behavior.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's why coaching became, not that it trumped therapy, but it certainly became this more expedient component for the times we live in.
It's here and now. We don't spend time in going back
past.
So much into the past. It's, okay, what's your goal? What's getting in the way of you reaching your goal?
Right. Let's look at
it's
the future.
Cognitive.
Let's help you make healthier choices in life. But therapy is a great thing. I mean, you have to do therapy. You have to work on yourself before you try to work on your future, you know?
So yes, I do.
Therapy is great. I think they truly complement each other. So let's not put therapy down. I think it's great.
Not at all.
You work on your past. You work on the root of the problem. And you really, and then you work with a coach and you're like, let's.
About actions.
Give us ways and resources that we can change.
Most of my clients actually come to me for coaching. They also are in their own therapy. So yeah. we're doing this concurrently.
Yeah, absolutely. And I work with therapists as well, and I introduce my clients if they're not already in therapy. I think it's a very good thing.
Do you feel hopeful about what you see out there, or do you feel like, God, people are so messed up?
Absolutely.
Now, I know you're not going to say the second part because, you know, you're representing your businesses, but it's not been easy for the modern human to, and especially with gay people. Do you think gay people are different than men and women?
Absolutely.
Do you think we have more stigma and more things to fight against?
We have more challenges, but
yeah,
we're not.
We have more challenges.
More self-esteem issues, more addiction issues.
Internalized homophobia is a big one.
Yeah, more than heterosexual people?
Well, yeah, we have some challenges. And even in relationships, I mean, we have more challenges than straight men and women do. Like, I'm having a child with my wife, and we have to go through a lot in order to create that. And so that's a challenge. But that's one challenge. But it's like, if you love yourself and you've come out and you feel liberated, you feel excited, you feel good about life, then those challenges are just like bumps on the road.
But that's,
you know,
saying a lot for a lot of people having to deal with being gay in this culture, feeling outside, feeling left out, mm-hmm. feeling always different or separated, feeling like they see. I took a friend of mine, a heterosexual friend of mine, male, to a lesbian bar. And he was, all of a sudden, he looked at me like, this is what you feel like. Mm-hmm. And now he wants to go back and he wants to feel those feelings again. He's a tremendous human being. But I just was like, yeah. Oh, and then I realized, oh, he doesn't even get any of that.
Right.
He's 35.
Right.
He's
but,
quite
you
a bit
know,
younger
the more
than
and
me.
More you go out, the more and more gay men and women come out and they're speaking their truth and they're excited about life, and I think the easier it gets, you know, and you just have to have a positive outlook as well. If you have a negative outlook and if you're a Debbie Downer, then that's what's going to show up in your life. You know, that's the honest truth. And that's the reason why we work with selective clients. Mm-hmm. We want to work with people that really have a connection with us and they're open to receiving our advice.
Mm-hmm. One last question. And that is, do you think that you need to practice being in relationships in order to be successful at being in them? I have friends who haven't been in a relationship for 10 years and yet they expect Mr. Right or Ms. Right to come in their lives. And I feel like, well, you're rusty. How do you know how to even compromise or negotiate anymore? You've done everything your own way because you've had to take care of yourself. And it's magical thinking to think that somebody's just going to pop into your life and it's all going to work out. To me, it's always been about getting in the trenches and keeping practicing to keep learning from each loss and each, you know, trial and each different person. And then eventually I just got better at it. Not that my way is the best, but it certainly helped me practice it, is all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like a craft.
Absolutely. Right. They need to practice. So every relationship that you go through is meaningful. It teaches you, you know, it shows you what works, what doesn't work, what to try in the future. It's absolutely important to practice.
Yes, and it takes experience. So go, if you haven't been in a relationship, go out there.
Jump
go
in.
On dates.
Try
absolutely.
Some stuff.
Yeah, yeah. They
Quit
might
thinking
not be the
about
right
it.
People, but just go out and experience
People
it.
Are afraid of rejection. They're afraid of pain. They're afraid of all the stirring up all their trigger points, all that, right?
Right.
But you're saying jump in or you'll never get in.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and
I
when
got
you're
it.
In
Take
the relationship, yeah, and when you're in the relationship itself, do personal growth. Understand how you give and receive love.
Yeah.
How your partner communicates, and really understand that.
Thank you so much for being here, both of you. Dr. Frankie, Sonia Singh.
Thank you.
It was really fun to learn
Thank
about.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You've been listening to Out of the Bay. Oh, and by the way, you can go to findingbliss.org for Sonia Singh if you're a gay man. If you're a lesbian looking to match up with somebody, you can go to Dr. Frankie's site at littlegaybook.com. This is Out in the Bay, a weekly show about gay life from San Francisco. Our show streams and is on the air every Thursday at 7 p.m., and then we archive it at outinthebay.com for podcasting. And we're on your phone. Just go to our website and download the Stitcher app. We've been on the air for almost 7 years. We'd like your support. Hit the Donate Now button on our website. Thanks to WY Enterprises for that. They help you manage your life and your office, wyenterprises.com. Write us, Marilyn at Out in the Bay, and Eric Jansen is at Eric at Out in the Bay, and that's .com. Thanks to the staff and management of KALW. Our engineer is Alan Farley. Thanks, Alan. Out of the Bay is produced by Eric Jansen and me. I'm Marilyn Pittman. Thanks for joining me. I just